First, the big news story this week from a legal standpoint and probably from a standpoint in news altogether is the Derek Chauvin case that's going on right now in Minneapolis. And of course, he is the Minneapolis police officer who was responsible for the death, or so the allegations go, of George Floyd. Opening statements were made. There have been several witnesses called to the stand. And we have a really special guest to recap the testimony and get some local insight onto what's going on in Minneapolis in this trial. Jeff Storms is one of the most prominent attorneys in Minnesota. He's a partner at Newmark, Storms & Dwarack. He handles a lot of these high-profile cases, as well as medical malpractice, sexual assault, police abuse. Along with Chicago's Romanucci and Blandon and famed civil rights attorney Ben Crump, currently represents the family of George Floyd, and he's following this case, of course, very carefully. Jeff, welcome to the show, and happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter, Karen. Thank you for having me.
So let's get right to it. The opening statements happened early this week on Monday. And as I told my listeners last week, Jeff, in the show, that the opening statements are really a roadmap of what the evidence is going to show, a kind of a preview. Can you recap quickly what the gist of the prosecution's opening statement was, and then the same for the defense?
You know, for the prosecution, there was one line that really stood out to me that encapsulates it, which is, you can believe your eyes. They showed the video, which they needed to do. And from there, they told the jury that they can reach the same conclusion that everyone else has, both the lay bystanders on the scene, the experts they're going to hear from, and really almost everyone else who's viewed this video. This was a murder. It was wrong. You're going to see the video of it, and there's no need to second guess yourself. What you're seeing is real, and it was wrong, and it was a murder. And so, you know, that was really the most critical point for them to hit, and then really start taking the sting out of the various defense attacks that are going to come along. You know, they're going to attack and have attacked George's character. They're going to come up with absurd theories of cause of death. And I think Jerry Blackwell did a masterful job of diffusing that from the outset while promoting his theme.
And I want to get to that issue of the danger there is in trying to belittle the victim here. We've seen that before, and it can really backfire with a jury, especially in a case where you look at that video, and like you said, it really does speak for itself as to how gruesome the whole situation was. But let's go back to the opening statements for the defense, and even though you are representing the family of George Floyd, if you can be, you know, rather objective and to how what their best arguments were in that opening statement.
You know, I don't think I'm alone and unobjective by saying that. I think the consensus has been the defense didn't really give a true solid theory of the case. And I think the defense at this point in time is confused which way it's going to go and is maybe taking a little bit of a throw everything against the wall and see what sticks. You know, in particular, the defense, as we've seen in evidence, kind of piggybacking off of its opening, has tried to lay the framework to suggest there was this large, unruly crowd. And maybe the officers, for some reason, had to be on George Floyd between the crowd and between George's size. You know, sort of painting a narrative of why they needed to do what they did, which, you know, frankly, I think, you know, everyone believes that dog just ain't gonna hunt. And so the other aspect that or theme that they've sort of sprinkled in, and what I would expect to likely be their more prominent theme in the case, is that George didn't die as a result of Officer Chauvin and the other officers putting weight on his back. He didn't die of asphyxiation. They're going to try to sell to the jury some theory that George died as a drug overdose, which is just, in our opinion, not supported by any of the objective and scientific evidence.
We're here with Jeff Storms, who's with the Minneapolis firm of Newmark, Storms & Dwarack, and we're talking about the George Floyd case and the trial. We're going to get a little bit into some of the evidence and some of the witnesses, and stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. We're on WGN, and we're here with Jeff Storms. He's a Minneapolis attorney who is representing, one of the attorneys representing the George Floyd family. And we're talking about the criminal case that's going on against Derek Chauvin, the officer. Thank you for joining us again, Jeff, on this Easter Sunday. I want to talk about the witnesses that were called by the prosecution. Who were the bystanders? And they seemed like they had a range from age 9 to age 61, and they talked about what they saw. Can you just tell our listeners how impactful you think that testimony was?
I think it was very impactful, in part in its uniformity. You know, going back to the prosecution's opening statement of saying you can believe your eyes, you have a wide range of bystanders with different life experiences all reaching the same conclusion that what was happening to George was wrong and unnecessary. And so to hear that wide range of bystanders all reach the same conclusion, which is the same conclusion that I think almost any reasonable person viewing the video has reached, I think has great impact. And I think there was also a strong emotional aspect.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I think all of them, maybe to a one, broke down in tears. There was one female who was a firefighter, I believe, or an EMT, and she was beside herself saying, you know, I know this guy's dying and I can't do anything. And she tried to do something and she got more forceful and she was declined. And she really, I think a lot of people felt that survivor's guilt or something akin to it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in terms of a little bit of a more technical legal analysis, and far be it from me to Monday morning quarterback anyone, but I think there were definitely some eyebrows raised as to how it was the defense allowed all that testimony
right.
to come in
to
the trial.
I was going to ask you that because the jury is the ultimate arbiter of what was right and what was wrong, right? So what testimony of these bystanders, I mean, from a layperson's standpoint, you'd say to yourself, yeah, I want to hear what people said when they're walking past, but does it really go to the issue that the jury has to decide? How did that evidence get in?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of attorneys are scratching their head, asking themselves that question. It would strike me that you certainly wouldn't want to make that objection in front of the jury because you might anger the jury if it becomes obvious what you're keeping out. And so it just strikes me that maybe there wasn't some proper motion in limine practice
issue. For listeners, motion in limine is a Latin term that means, you know, motion to limit. And what happens in a trial, and Jeff, why don't you talk about a motion to limine, what that generally is in a trial?
Well, generally, as an attorney prepares for trial, we know there's certain pieces of evidence that we want to keep out. And often it's so devastating that you don't even want to run the risk of it coming in or having the jury watch you try to keep it out in front of them by making an objection. So we make that motion before the trial starts, before the jury is seated, so that that issue is resolved and you don't have even the bad appearance of that really damaging testimony coming into evidence.
So one of the things you talked about before the break is the fact that the defense is trying to say that there was this unruly crowd and that some of the people who were testifying were actually interfering maybe with Chauvin's ability to conduct his job. And that was part of some of the cross-examination that, you know, that perhaps Chauvin would have let up. I mean, there's this idea that he would have let up on Floyd had the crowd not gotten ugly. Is that what kind of they were trying to do? And does that seem like a good strategy to you?
It's not a strategy that anyone's going to buy, I wouldn't think, based upon the testimony we've seen. You know, at no point in time did you have one of these bystanders run in and attempt to interfere physically with the officers. They stayed where they were told to stay. They were expressing concerns, and concerns with a lot of specificity. You know, check this man's pulse. You know, I'm a firefighter. He's not responsive. You know, you're choking the air out of this man. You know, they gave them very specific information that any reasonable person should have been acting upon at the time. And they were right. You know, certainly the jury is going to know that there is they're going to have the benefit of hindsight here, even though they'll be told to ignore that. But all of these bystanders were saying all the same things that we say at home, even if we watch the video now. You know, it's almost impossible to watch the video and still not hope for a different outcome because it's so obvious.
Right, of course.
I don't think they're going to have much success there, Karen.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess, as I've said before, when you cross-examine a witness who's there, and the witness is sympathetic, the person's crying because they're reliving this traumatic incident of watching a person die before your eyes, and to cross-examine them and to sort of even make an accusation, even if it's a sideways one, that you are part responsible for Chauvin being distracted, I just think that you got to be very careful there because the jury could turn on you very quickly making those kinds of insinuations, I guess I should say.
Yeah, if I were Eric Nelson sitting at home, I would really think twice about pursuing that line to the extent it's available any further to him this week.
Exactly.
The witness is called.
Well, one of the most astounding pieces of testimony, in my view, was Lieutenant Richard Zimmerman. And Ben, can you play a little? I just have a tiny little clip from his testimony, and he is a current police officer. He was a person who served on the force longer than anybody else on the whole police department in an unusual situation here. He testifies against one of his own, which you rarely see. Ben, why don't you play that clip?
Based on your review of the body-worn camera videos of the incident.
Yes.
And directing your attention, you know, to that moment when Mr. Floyd is placed on the ground.
Yes.
What is your, your view of that use of force during that time period?
Totally unnecessary.
What do you mean?
Well, first of all, pulling him down to the ground, face down, and putting your knee on the neck for that amount of time is just uncalled for.
Jeff, how does this testimony? Is this an astounding piece of testimony, or am I just misreading this?
You know, it would be astounding for everyone in the world, maybe except for me and a few other people, because I've actually had the benefit of deposing Lieutenant Zimmerman when Minneapolis police officers killed a man named David Smith in almost an identical fashion to George Floyd in 2010. And when I deposed Lieutenant Zimmerman in 2010, he said virtually all of the same things. And so it's hard for all of us to understand how it is George Floyd dies in 2020 when you have these commanding officers like Lieutenant Zimmerman saying the same thing 10 years ago. Everyone in the department knew that you couldn't restrain somebody in the prone position like this. It's unlawful and likely to kill somebody.
I think it's just very, very compelling. The most experienced guy in the whole department, again, turning on one of his own, which you just don't see, especially, I know in Chicago, that's been a big criticism of the police department for years and years. Let's a broader picture here is the issue of fair trial. And again, you know, some people are so angered by this case, they say, I don't care if he gets a fair trial, you should go to jail. Okay. And, you know, and I understand that sentiment. I think a lot of people have it. But as an attorney, I've done criminal defense work, you want to make sure the case is tried fairly. You want to make sure all the rules are followed. And, you know, if there's a conviction, there is, and you just want the best for your client, you want to do the best job you can. How in the world how is it that this could possibly be a fair trial for Derek Chauvin, given the fact that everybody knows about this case? There were riots across the world, and especially because during this jury selection, a $27 million settlement was announced between the city of Minneapolis and the family of George Floyd. What other evidence of guilt could there be? I know that you're on the side of the family, but is there a concern that there's not going to be a fair trial and that this might result in some sort of reversal?
No, so certainly you're going to see appeals in this case no matter what happens if Chauvin's convicted, right? And they'll do the same thing they're doing in opening, which is throw every excuse they can. But they seated a jury in this case the way they seat a jury in every other case, and you have the opportunity to get rid of jurors who cannot be fair. And so, you know, the court handled the process, you know, correctly and seated a jury. So I don't think, at this point in time, anyone should be overly concerned with that fact.
And I hope that's the case, because, again, the chips will fall where they may, and it's just, you know, our system is a very good one. But in a case like this, I just think it's very difficult to get people who haven't at least made up their mind, at least partially so. I want to ask you, Jeff, you have dealt with a family. The family received their settlement, or at least made the settlement deal. They're watching this trial. How is this hard for them to watch? Is it helpful for them at all from an emotional standpoint? Is this something that's good for them for closure purposes? What can you tell us about that?
You know, anytime you have a family sit through something like this, it's ripping whatever Band-Aid you've managed to put on it off all over again. It's very much like your loved one dying all over again. And so I think you're certainly seeing a lot of those emotions. But I think it's important to remember that, you know, whole justice in this case also requires the other three officers to still be prosecuted. So this family has got a long way to go to see whole justice.
I agree with you. Jeff, you know, we're going to have to break, but I think that I'd like to have you back on if you can. I know there are going to be developments down the line. You're right there. You've got the pulse of the community. Jeff Storms from the law firm of Newmark Storms in Dworak in Minneapolis. Can you give our listeners your contact information?
Sure. You're welcome to give me a call at any point on my office number, which is 612-455-7055, or drop me an email at jeff@newmarkstorms.com.
Thank you so much. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show.